This episode contains adult content. Listener discretion is advised. The MFG Cast presents Human.
The scene is the French countryside. You know, you could hear explosions off in the distance, you know, the rattle of machine gun fire, you hear yelling, whatever. And then the camera sort of pans down. You see this Jeep bouncing along, you know, the countryside. There's three American GIs in the Jeep, just, you know, yelling and, you know, just fooling around, you know, heading off towards this looks like a farm in the distance. And, you know, as camera comes in closer, you can see Georgie's a passenger. There's two other guys with him, and they're just, you know, fucking around, right? Like, they're not actively fighting at the moment. You know, the battle is raging a little bit further away. And as they get closer to this farmhouse, you just hear a, you know, whistle. And then right in front of the Jeep, boom, just this huge explosion. The Jeep flips, everybody's, you know, yelling, you know, again, you hear the rattle of machine gun fire, you know, hear George yell, the truck just flips, the Jeep flips, and, you know, you see a hand come out from underneath the Jeep and kind of claw his way out. You know, you see George come out, and he's like, oh my god, are you guys all right? Are you guys all right? And he turns to pull the driver, who looks really bad shape, pulls him up into his lap, and he's just like, you know, he's cradling his head. He's like, you're going to be all right, buddy. You're going to be all right. And like, you can tell like his neck is not the way that it should be. You know, you hear the other guy moan, and he kind of crawls out, you know, he's sort of behind the Jeep. He was, you know, ejected, I guess. Right. Like, I don't know, you're not inside the vehicle, but you know, he's kind of coming over, and it's just like this high-pitched whine, like, you know, the movies, you hear that, like, stress whine, and it just all zooms down onto that, where the whine gets louder and louder and louder and louder, and the camera starts pulling away.
Okay. And then, you know, as George kind of relives that scene, it pulls back into what's happening at the moment now. You are cradling Jane, whispering to her, you know, you're going to be okay, you're going to be okay. You've got Paul Blinker, gun in hand, towering above you, not pointing it at you, but having the gun at its side. And he says, can't remember what he said last time. I think he says, I assume we have to talk.
I think he only said it's time to talk, or we have to talk, or something.
Exactly. God, would he say that though? I don't think he would initiate that. So I'm going to say that he looks at you and he says, I'm assuming you have some questions. Okay, so before you ask your questions, you hear sirens from, it seems like all around, but it's distant because you're not paying much attention. You can hear police sirens. You can hear emergency sirens. You maybe can even hear a fire truck blaring its horn. Okay, you're going to have exactly 2 minutes to ask him your questions before everyone shows up.
Well, that sucks, because I don't think he recognizes the situation that he's in. Mm-hmm. So I think when he says that, you know, George kind of like snaps his head up, but like he's still like, it's almost overlay of, you know, France and New York together, mm-hmm. You know, because people are screaming because there's gunshots and stuff. And he's just like, Jones, I need a medic. We need a medic.
And Paul Blinker, Paul, what would you call him in this situation? We'll say
your mystery man.
Yeah, exactly. Your mystery man. Yeah, for sure. Kind of looks at you and says, son, you're not in the war anymore. At ease.
I feel like I should roll something.
Okay. Are you going to roll to snap out of it? Or are you going to roll to discern what questions you want to ask. What are you thinking?
I think to snap out of it, right? Like, is it a psyche check to like pop out of it?
Yeah, I would assume so. Yeah, for sure. It's definitely your psyche.
So what do you think? And throw me a number. Like, is it easier? So, right?
Ooh, it's gonna be hard because you're kind of in the shit right now, mentally and physically. So I think I'm gonna make it a six. That's gonna be it's up there.
All right. I don't think I have anything to add. I mean, I feel like insight's not an appropriate ad. Awareness, no. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I would allow that. I mean, you are having a tough time at the moment, but.
To recognize the situation, like, I don't know if it's completely appropriate, right? Because awareness more is like, do I see a thing than.
Yeah. But it could be the awareness of the situation as well, though.
Right. That's the only reason why I say it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'll allow it.
All right. I think that's a six. I got a seven.
Nice. Look at you. All right. Yeah. So your revelry and your past is snapped awake and you realize where you are.
And I think he just sort of gapes and he says, Paul? Oh, he wouldn't say like, oh, fuck. I lost the voice. Completely. Paul?
Yeah, that's right. He says, you've got that right, young man.
What's going on? She needs a doctor. We need to get out of here. Where's Johnson?
Oh, you don't have to worry about Johnson anymore. I took care of him.
Who the hell are you? I thought you were a reporter.
I am. I have many faces.
What the fuck does that even mean? She needs a doctor. We need to get to the hospital.
Well, you know what? I'm assuming that one's coming to for you right now. I really can't help you with that right now because I'm a wanted criminal.
What? you just wrote an article about JJ. What do you mean you're a criminal?
I mean, I've done some things. Maybe I'm not wanted yet, but I'm assuming surely eventually will catch up to me. I'm kind of a sly cat, you know. I'm have camouflage. I'm able to get in and out of situations, but you know, I'm sure the cat will be caught by its tail eventually.
I think he just kind of looks at him dumbfounded for a minute. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. The sirens are getting very close.
What do you ask? How do I contact you?
You know what? Leave a note.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
And he like laughs and he says, you know what? And he kind of like listen. You can tell he's like listening in the background. He says, I think that's my cue. We must part ways. Parting is such sweet sorrow, but I will see you on the morrow or, you know, sometime after.
Yeah, thanks, I guess.
I think you'll be fine, kid. And he kind of gives you a wink and he takes off behind the car and disappears.
And then, like, you know, the whole time he's been like, you know, stroking her face and like, you know, whatever. But I think he turns his full attention back to her.
Right? Yeah.
Like checking her pulse. You know, looking to see if anything's broken, you know, just kind of seeing what sort of state she's like, completely ignoring anything that has happened to him. I know he took some damage. I don't remember what we said, if he dislocated his shoulders, sprained a wrist. I don't remember.
I think you actually cracked a couple of ribs, I think is what happened.
Could have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he took damage from getting clocked over the head. Mm-hmm. And then I definitely took health damage because I see that's marked down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it could have been, yeah, that bouncing around the car.
For sure. Yeah. So as you check Jane out, you realize that her left arm and her right leg are both broken. You can tell just because even though you're not a doctor, you know, dealt with some stuff in the war. You probably talked to a couple of buddies that were like medics and stuff like that. And her pulse is lower than like normal. And she's breathing a little labored, but the fact that she's still breathing and not coughing up anything is a positive sign, you think?
Sure. Since we're out of the car, I don't think he would try to move her, right? Because we have to go.
Yeah.
Right? But if Johnson's dead, there's no smell of smoke or fire. You know, won't see any fire or anything. So he wouldn't want to move her because he wouldn't want to hurt her any more than she could and is already.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think he just stays like that, sort of, you know, cradling her
Yeah, for sure.
Just kind of like looking around like, yeah, the fuck, where's the ambulance?
Yeah, because technically you can't see because you're on the opposite side of the street, but you hear like cars start to screech their tires and stop. You hear a lot of voices. You actually start to smell some gas that's coming from the car because it's actually flipped on its top.
Right.
And you're kind of concerned about the possibility of something happening. But before that happens, you see paramedics on the scene. You see policemen on the scene. They, you know, make sure that you're all right. They just start asking you a bunch of questions. Some things you're just like, let's just say, let's do this. Why don't you roll me an awareness check, and I'm going to have it be, actually, let's do an awareness check, but then it's going to be one of those gratiated scale things. So like, depending upon what you roll, I'm going to actually tell you the questions that they ask you. And then if they roll low, then you're going to miss some of the questions that they're asking you at the moment, because everything is just kind of happening so quickly. And you're so concerned about Jane that maybe you don't catch some things.
Yeah, like if they're asking about me, like I just kind of push them off. I'm like, no, she needs, you know, that sort of thing. I rolled 3 2s, so that's a 3.
nice.
He does not give a shit. Get her in an ambulance and let's get to the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, there's a bunch of these questions that are said to you, and it's almost like the Peanuts teacher, you know, wah, 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 wah. You don't catch half of them and stuff like that. You know, you hear a policeman question you like, who's this dead body? You know, like that's one of them. One of them is, are you OK? You know, that kind of thing. They're asking like the more like not just you, but her. They're like, are you OK? And you just kind of mumble out like, you know, I think she has a broken arm and a broken leg. My ribs are kind of busted up, but no, don't worry about me. Worry about her.
Right. And then like I try to stand up and like stumble because my ribs are broken.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a fucking concussion or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and like as much as I'm trying to push them away from me into her, I assume that they, you know, not like they have to like bodily strap me down or whatever. But, like, no, you need help, sir. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. We'll say the medics help her. The police actually help you. And then let's see, what's the other question they would ask?
I mean, they probably ask our names.
Yeah.
You know, are you?
Yeah, let's just say,
yeah.
For sure. Like, yeah, let's just say something like that. Like, you know, your names and what are you doing out here? That kind of thing. It's like, that seems like two questions, but whatever. It's kind of together. Like, what were you two doing out here? That kind of thing. And you're like, right now it doesn't matter. I'll answer your questions later. I just need her to be safe, you know?
Right.
For sure.
I try to climb in the ambulance with her to go to the, you know, to make sure that, not that she's getting there, right? But like, just to make, it's that thing where like, you know, the person that you care about is hurt. So you want to be there, like even if you're kind of in the way. So I don't know if they let me, but he definitely like tries to climb into the back of the ambulance.
Well, let's let fate decide. So they let you in. But then one of the policemen accompanies you in there just because of what's happened. They don't know what happened. So they're like, they don't know who you are. They don't know who she is. They don't know who the dead body is. They don't know what happened. So they're like, we're going to take every precaution.
Yeah, that's fine. I think he kind of calms down then, like once they're like on the way and the sirens are going, the cops like knee to knee with me. Right. And we're kind of like at the back of the ambulance. So we're out of the way and they're, you know, checking her and splitting her leg and like doing whatever they have to do.
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't know if he wants to like start pumping me for quite, you know, questions and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, yeah, the cop, he's like, he introduces himself. He's like, So not everybody that's a cop is a detective, right? It's like,
correct.
So then what would just a regular beat cop be called?
Patrolman.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Right. It's funny because I was just like, why all of a sudden can't I remember this?
Yeah. Officer.
Yeah. So yeah. Officer. Jesus Police Christ.
Officer.
Very simple. Okay. So yeah, basically he's like, I'm Officer Buttig. He's like, I have to ask you a few questions. I have to ask you a few questions. Number one, have you or your friend here sustained any gunshot injuries? I see that the gentleman that was on the ground there has a couple of bullets in him. Are you guys okay?
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm not, we're not okay, but no, we haven't been shot. There was a guy, and apparently he said that's, you know, kind of like holds his head, right? You know, because he has to think and everything hurts. Agent Johnson, Ace Johnson. He kidnapped us. I don't know. He was crazy.
Wait a minute. You're saying an officer of the law kidnapped you?
Yeah. He came. He was trying to lean on me. His partner was murdered, I think, is what I heard, by one of the crime families. He worked in the mafia division, and he was trying to get me to infiltrate the mob to bring them down. He kidnapped us. I don't know. He was crazy. He was going to kill us.
And so he's like, so this gentleman, what agency does he work for? He doesn't work for the police department. So who does he work for?
Yeah, he was with the FBI. He was wanted. He was on the run. He killed John Costa, a guy named John Costa.
And he's writing this down, and he says, when this Mr. Ace Johnson told you he was from the FBI, did he ever show you any ID?
Yeah, he did. It looked legit. I mean, I never talked to the FBI before.
Okay. So this FBI agent, he kidnapped you, and then where was he going to take you?
He said he was going to take us back to my apartment and then make it look like, you know, I killed her and killed myself or something. Ah, fuck. He starts moving and then moves and then like grunt, you know, like just kind of like, you know, his ribs kind of like poke him.
yeah, for sure. And the medic is actually like is like checking you and stuff like that, just making sure and like that kind of thing. And, you know, she turns to one of the other medics and she's like, he might have a couple of broken ribs here. We were going to have to admit him to the hospital. And so the officer just keeps trying to grill you while he has you. And he's like, so how, number one, how did this car spin out of control and flip? And well, eyewitnesses say that the car flipped out of control and landed how it landed. Also, Mr. Johnson has two shots in him. How did that happen?
I don't know. We were climbing out of the car. We were trying to get away. I had to get Jane out of the car, and we were behind it. And then I heard two shots. I don't know. So somebody must have shot him. I don't know.
Was this before or after this accident?
It was after, because the car had flipped over and we bounced around the inside. He entered the intersection. He was driving too fast and the car hit us.
The gentleman who shot this Mr. Johnson, do you recognize this person?
I didn't see him. You want me to make a fast talk?
Yeah, I think I do. I'm gonna make that a five. Okay. DL of five.
That is a five on the die, and plus one is six.
Nice. Okay, so he's satisfied with your answer. He says, is there any other info that you can give me that I can use to help you?
I don't know. Rank and serial number?
Excuse me?
Not that the guy gets it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I was in the military. No, I don't know. I mean, he clubbed me. Johnson clubbed me from behind. We were getting in a cab, and he hit me, and I woke up in the car, and he was going on. I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. So he says to you that they're gonna admit you to the hospital, but we're gonna have armed guard in front of both of your rooms. We're probably going to have to ask you and your friend here some more questions, but and he's trying to find a way to say it like not threatening, like he's not trying to be threatening, but he's like, don't try to like admit yourself out of the hospital until we say you're ready.
Yeah, sure. And then like he leans forward and kind of like tugs at the at one of the medics. It's like, hey, is she going to be okay?
And he kind of like looks at you with kind of a pained look, and she's and he and he's like, she's sustained a lot of injuries. It's going to be a little touch and go right now. I can't really speak to it. That's probably something for the doctor to tell you.
And he like he crumbles, like he falls back against the, you know, the inside of the van or the ambulance, and just kind of like, you know, falls in on himself.
That yeah, makes yeah. sense. Yeah, for sure.
And doesn't, and then he doesn't respond anymore. Like yeah, after yeah. that, right? Like he's just looking at them working on her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll say that, you know, at, we'll kind of say that, you know, as you're doing that, the music kind of swells into this sad little tune, future unknown kind of thing, and we'll kind of fade to black. As we come back to, you are just waking up. You are in a hospital bed. You are hooked up to some saline. You're also hooked up to some machines that kind of monitor your heartbeat, stuff like that. You can tell you've had, you have some like wraps around your core basically, or whatever, for your ribs. You could, you feel that very touchy. So like, even if you like move your body just a titch, you could feel the excruciating pain in your ribs.
Breathe too deep.
Yes, exactly. Accidentally cough because you have like dry mouth and you're just like, that kind of thing.
Interesting fact, not that anybody cares. In 1947, they would wrap me up really tight. They don't actually do that anymore.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know that it prevents healing or whatever, but it's they don't generally do that now.
Okay. So basically they probably,
but they would have then for sure.
Yeah. 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 It's probably something where it's constricting instead of letting your body heal naturally. Yeah. Makes sense.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. But it's not as cool as this, what we have it wrapped in looking cool in this story. Yeah. And you look around, it's a nice sunny day, but you know, it doesn't matter what the weather is outside. You kind of have a little rain cloud over your head kind of thing. You look around. Nobody is there. Nothing is happening. You can just hear the lonely beeps of your heart. You look to the right. You look on the table. There is a one little small bouquet of flowers. It has a note attached to it, but you don't dare try to make a move because you're kind of in a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm. I just like very like slowly, you know, move my head left and right to see, you know, if anybody's in the room, if anything else is going on, or if, you know, if the flowers are the only thing that sort of stands out, but he's just kind of like assessing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So you look around and you kind of see like, you know, the flowers, it's a nice little room and stuff like that. Nothing seems too out of the ordinary, except for when you go to pick up your left hand, you are actually handcuffed to your bed.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things where he kind of like looks and then he goes to like, you know, rub his face or whatever. And it's like, chink.
Yeah, exactly. And then you like things kind of come back to you a little bit. You know, you're like, of course, like it's probably ongoing investigation. You didn't give them all the clue or all the information that you had. So, of course, they have to kind of figure out what's going on. They, you know, they don't really know you as of yet, as far as you know. So you are there for your own safety, or for their safety and for the safety of the hospital.
So I think he's just like, ching, ching, what the fuck? And he looks for the call button, which yeah. I assume is probably like either pinned to the side of the bed or.
Yeah, for sure.
Whatever. And, yeah. Know, just starts jamming the button.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, we're going to say like it is, you know, on the right side where your right hand is actually movable and stuff like that, not chained to something, and you or hit the call button.
Yeah,
for sure. It's just laying there. You're able to get it easily. A nurse, very nice, lovely looking lady, comes in and she says, Mr. Armstrong, you rang. What can I do for you?
Like he like pulls this left arm up to show the chain. He's like, what's going on? Where's Jane? How's she doing? What day is it? Like,
yeah. Yeah. So she's like, calm down, sir. It's okay. She's like, you are on the mend right now. So, keeping your blood pressure at a very good pace is the way to go here. as far as you being cuffed to your bed, that is something that the officers said that is a precaution, not only for you, but for the people of this hospital. So until they give the go ahead, this is where you're going to be for the short future, hopefully.
Get Brian O'Shea on the phone. This is ridiculous. Where's Jane?
And she's like, you say Brian O'Shea and she's like, who the fuck is that? You know, she just kind of gives you that look like, I don't know who that is. I'm not going to call them for you kind of thing. But she's like, your friend right now is in the intensive care unit. She's had quite a few injuries and we are attending to her, trying to get her to where she needs to be.
I don't know. Would they have phones in the rooms back then like they do now?
You think they would?
I mean, I don't think that's a new thing, right?
No.
I
mean, yeah. So how about this? How about we say there is? It's not close enough to you to where you can reach it. But she says, how about this? I have one of the officers outside of your room right now. I'll just make sure that it's okay for you to have have your phone call. And I will be back momentarily.
He starts to protest and then just he doesn't say anything. Like he starts to. But like, it's not her fault.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He just kind of like falls back into the pillow.
Yeah, for sure. So she goes out. You can hear some muttering or whatever. And a very tall, very lanky fellow comes in and he says, Mr. Armstrong, I'm Officer... Boy, coming up with names is tough these days. I feel like we've got so many names now.
You just have a name generator open up.
I know. The only thing is I can come up with names. I'm just worried about using the same one. So he's like, I'm Officer Freitag. I hear you would like to have a phone call.
Yeah, or you call him. Which department? Call Brian O'Shea. He's a detective over there in the Queens PD. I mean, what the hell? You know who I am. What am I? You know, and he like lifts his arm back up again.
Yeah, yeah. He kind of looks at you with a stern look and he says, look, Mr. Armstrong, this is an ongoing investigation. There's a FBI agent murdered, and you two have sustained quite a few injuries. Now, I don't know exactly what's going on here, but you may think that I know you, but I don't. And this is not going to be one of those, oh, I get to do whatever I want because I worked he wouldn't say that. I can do whatever I want because I am a practicing PI, but no, that's not the case. You are a suspect in this investigation, and you will be treated as so.
Well, if you're not going to call him, then give me the phone.
So he like gives you a look like obviously he wasn't going to like not let you make the phone call. But yeah, he gives you kind of a stern look. He walks over, grabs the phone and then places it on you and lets you call. He doesn't actually go out of the room. He actually stands off to the side to hear your conversation.
That's fine. I don't care. So he's a detective now. Does he have his own desk phone? Probably.
Yeah. Yep.
So yeah. So he calls Brian's desk number.
Sounds good. So yeah. So you call the number and it rings and rings and rings and he doesn't pick up. I'm just kidding. That would be really mean.
I mean, it's possible. Right?
Yes, like, it is possible. Working. You never know. Yeah, for sure. But I feel like for story, this would be a great time for him to answer. So yeah, he opens up and he says, or he answers the phone. And he says, Detective O'Shea.
Brian, it's George.
Georgie, how are you? Are you okay?
No, I'm not. Actually, I'm in the hospital, chained to the bed. As a matter of fact, think you could help me out here because these guys are treating me. They're treating me pretty bad. And he like kind of cocks his head and looks at the other guy.
Yeah, he does. He stays stone faced. O'Shea is just kind of like, he says, you know what? I owe you a bunch. I'm kind of actually working on it right now. The chief really doesn't want me to stick my nose in this business, but I'm going to try to see what I can do to help.
Jesus, Keely. Fuck, they got me chained to the bed in here. I mean, God, fuck.
You could be chained in a jail cell instead.
For being kidnapped?
Well, they don't really know the whole story. I don't know if you know this, but it's a thing where like we have to have real evidence to actually go on. And he kind of chuckles a little bit, even though he knows like it's a serious situation. You know, he's like, he's basically kind of goading you a little bit, like, come on, you know better. You have to have the evidence and, you know, in spades before you can, you know, really claim someone's innocence. So even though he trusts you and he thinks that you don't have anything to do with it, he knows how the law works.
You know, I appreciate anything you could do. You know, Jane's in intensive care, and then they got me chained in the bed. I can't even get in there and go see her.
I've heard. He like sighs really deeply, and he's like, "Well, let's see. I do have a couple of friends down at let's say you're at Hodgkin's Hospital. I have a couple of friends at Hodgkin's Hospital. Boy, why did I say that? I can barely say it. He's like, let me see if I can work something out to where you can at least get a visit.
I'd appreciate that.
All right. Well, I don't want to cut this off short because I really do care for you and I hope you're okay. But if you want me to do this thing, I'm going to have to get to it.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
You betcha. Keep safe.
He just kind of laughs. And I assume Brian's already hung up.
Yeah, so for sure.
He just like, you know, sort of forlornly drops the receiver back into the cradle.
Mm-hmm.
And then looks back over to the officer like, I'm done. You can get this now. I don't think he says anything.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah.
Yeah. So he picks up the phone and he kind of puts it down. And he says, what'd he say?
Don't go anywhere, asshole.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. He kind of looks at you a little bit. And he instead of like having that stone-faced look on his face or whatever, he says, I'm sorry what you're going through. He says, but we just have to dot all of our T's or cross all our T's and dot all our I's.
I don't think he looks at him right away.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, kind of turns to look at him. I think he says, look, I get it. You guys are doing your jobs. It's just, it's been a lot.
Yep. And he just kind of like shakes his head and he says, I get it. He says, I've been through my own tragedies. He says, I'll call. Who's the first guy that I told you? Was it
Buttig?
Buttig was in the ambulance, right? Yeah. He's like, I'll talk to Officer Buttig. I think he just needs to ask you a few more questions and then maybe we can get you out of here.
Yeah. It's send him over. I'm not going anywhere.
He kind of like laughs at that. He's like, obviously you're not going anywhere, that kind of thing. And he says, all right. I'll let the nurse know that she can handle your needs.
Can you ask her to bring me a cup of coffee? I mean, I don't know that they would give it to him, but
yeah, for sure. Yeah. You're not in jail. You're in a hospital. So yeah, he's like, I think I can do that. And he goes out. The nurse actually, you know, give it a few minutes. The nurse actually comes with a coffee. She just gives it to you black because she doesn't know, you know, what you like or whatever. And she looks at you and she says, "How are you feeling, Mr. Armstrong?"
I've been better.
I'd imagine.
When he sighs like that, I imagine he goes, "Oh."
Yeah, for sure. She's like, "Yeah, you've been asleep for a few days."
A few days.
She's like, "Yeah, we weren't concerned, but the doctor said that he thought that you probably deserved a much needed rest."
Sure, I guess. Did anybody call? Anybody come looking for me?
She says, "Well, somebody stopped over to see how you're doing, and she dropped off these flowers." And she kind of walks by the table. She picks up the card that's in the flowers, and she hands the card to you.
I flip it open, or take it out of the envelope, or do whatever I need to do to be.
Yeah, for sure. You open it up, and it says, "Hope you're doing okay. You can't go dying on me. I need this job too much."
He laughs like that, and then it's like, oh.
And then it's got a little smiley face, and it has Janice's name at the bottom.
Okay. I assume so when I saw the flowers, but yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, you know, he's, you know, sort of clutching his ribs now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he takes his hand away and just, you know, kind of leaves the note sort of like on the side of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And says, God, you could smoke in hospitals back then, right?
Yeah.
I think he says, where's my stuff? I need a smoke.
And she kind of laughs or whatever. And she looks in the corner. She's like, I think your clothes are here. And she goes and she fishes them out, and she, you know, fishes one out for you. She hands it to you. She finds your lighter, lights it up for you. And she says, just so you're aware, not only do you have a couple of broken ribs, but you had a contusion in your right leg. We had to stitch that up. Hopefully that should be fine. But your ribs, you're really going to have to take it easy for a while.
Did they have to stitch up? He wouldn't ask, but does she say, did they have to stitch up my head or anything? I don't know if they had staples back then.
Yeah. And they might have. Yeah. She says like there, you know, you had a few stitches in the back of your head as well. I think she says like, I think that's another reason probably why you were passed out for a few days is because of the head trauma. She said that they kept a close eye on you just to make sure that it wasn't anything serious. And then she talks a little bit more about Jane. She says, your lady friend, she hasn't woken up yet. And they say, she sustained quite a few injuries, and it's a little touch and go right now.
I think his hands got a visible shake as he like brings the cigarette back to his lips, take like a real deep drag when she's telling him that. And he says, boy, I would say I'd kill the fucker that did it, but he's already dead. And like, I don't even want to say that because I'm handcuffed to a bed.
Yes. Yep. Not the best thing to say right at the moment.
He says, I think he just says she's got to wake up. I don't think he says anything. It's just that.
Yeah, for sure.
Right. And trembling, taking a smoke.
Yeah. And she says, I think she will. You just got to have faith. She says, I'll pray for her tonight.
I appreciate that.
She says, is there anything else I can get for you? I think I can get you something soft to eat, maybe some applesauce. Trying to figure out what else is soft.
I mean, mashed potatoes.
Mashed potatoes. Like, yeah, it's funny. That's exactly something. What the other thing I was thinking of.
Yeah. And then, he, you know, kind of like he tries to move a little bit and then he winces. He says, I think I'm hungry. It's been a couple of days.
Yeah. She says, I'll see what I can dredge up for you, she says.
Thanks. And then he like goes to flick the cigarette and then like realizes he's in the bed.
Yeah.
And he just kind of like holds it up with his big fucking ash on it.
Yeah. Before she leaves, she'll put a ashtray on your lap or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. And she's just like, she winks at you and so she says, you be careful there.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah.
So, like tap it out. It's trying to like judge the distance.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So she, you know, she heads out. She brings you some, you know, nice soft foods to eat. Maybe some, I don't know if they had Jell-O back then. I'm sure they did, or some version of Jell-O. Give you something like that. Some more coffee, a little bit of water. You wait for a few hours. Well, do you wait for a few hours?
I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. You know, is there anyone else you want to try to get a hold of? Do you want to try to do anything like that while you're waiting for Officer Budding to show up?
So I see the clock on the wall. What time is it?
Let's say it is 1 p.m.
Before she leaves, he's like, you said a couple of days. What's today?
Because
it was Friday, it would have been late Friday night.
Yeah.
A couple of days, it might be Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, let's say it's Monday. Yeah, Monday afternoon.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Could I have the phone again?
She says Officer Freitag says you can make as many phone calls as you want. So she lays the phone on your lap and then she takes off. I want you to roll me an awareness check.
Okay.
We'll have the DLB3.
So that's going to be a yes. And I rolled a 5. So it's
okay. 6. Yeah. So you realize that both Officer Freitag is actually outside of your door and he has his ear trained inside. So when you make your phone call, he's going to be probably listening on you.
Okay. So he looks at the phone for a minute, takes the last drag of the cigarette, puts it out, and tries to grab the phone, like to go to dial. So Grip picks up the receiver and then tries to dial with his left hand. It's chunk. Fuck. And then like he puts the receiver down like on his lap and then dials the number for the office to call Janice.
Nice. I think we've talked about this before. Did you're calling your place Armstrong Investigations, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure, double check. Yeah. So then, yeah, you hear her voice. You hear Armstrong Investigations. This is Janice. How may I help you?
Hey, Janice. It's George.
George, you're awake.
Yeah. I just got up a little bit ago.
How do you feel?
Terrible. Thanks for asking.
She laughs. She says, I think you're going to be okay. How is Jane?
She hasn't woken up yet.
She, you know, you kind of hear her grunt a little bit, or, you know, just this disappointed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She said, that's a damn shame. She says, I'm sure she'll pull through. We've never really talked about if they've met. So I will let you decide this. Have they met before?
He for sure has talked about her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they really hang out outside of work. Like they did that once and then he was almost murdered. And then it kind of like broke all that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like has she met at your office before you left for the day?
Maybe.
I don't want to fit it in. I just like, I want you to decide what you think. If you don't think she's been there, then that's fine.
I don't know. I feel like Jane might be the kind of person that would just like pop in, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, I think that makes sense, really.
Does that
really
feel right?
It's funny because we haven't really fleshed out Jane's personality a ton, but like I agree. I feel like she's the one that is just kind of like, hey, you know, I'm going over here, you know, whatever you want to come with, that kind of thing. We can share a cab, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. What are you doing? Let's get out of here and go for a walk in the park kind of thing. Like, I feel like she's that sort of like playful, flirtatious, like that was the first note we got on New Year's Eve, right? Like that was
kind of exactly
set it up for that. So I feel like she's probably like popped in.
Yeah,
you know, sure. They've probably exchanged, you know, like a little bit, but I don't think like we've all been out together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so like Janice is like, I know Jane. I know the kind of type of person she is. She's gonna hold up. Don't you worry about that.
I hope so. I mean, it's kind of my fault. If, you know, if we weren't out, you know, if she wasn't with me, you know, if we hadn't gone out to dinner that night, you know, she'd been staying away. You know, she wouldn't be in this situation. It'd just be me.
And you hear her kind of pause a little bit. And she says, you can't talk like that. Situations will happen regardless of where you put yourself in. I know that your profession is a little more dangerous than others, but Jane knew what she was getting into when she was dating you. So we all do. We all know what we're getting into when we get in with Mr. Armstrong, she says. And she kind of giggles a little bit.
He doesn't. He says, well, you know, maybe that's not fair to you then.
And then she pauses a little bit more and she says, you know what, George? I don't like this side of you. And she kind of giggles. And she's like, I'm a big girl, just like Jane is. She's like, we know exactly where we're going and what kind of trouble, mischief we might be getting in. You know what? Anything can happen. My father's father was a pastor and was always good, always preached on Sundays, never ate meat, always ate fish, lived a good life. Stepped out on the street one day, got hit by a bus. You know, sometimes life just kind of throws curveballs at us.
I think he says, well, maybe I'm tired of being the catcher.
And she like, she takes a little bit of time and she just kind of like sniffs a little bit. And she says, I don't think I believe you.
I don't think he says anything for a long minute. And he says, I don't know what I'm going to do if she doesn't make it. I don't know if I can live with myself.
And she kind of pauses for a little bit herself. And she says, I know you don't have many people in your life right now, but you've got me. And no matter what happens, I'll be here to support you.
You're a good kid. I appreciate that.
And she just says, I'll keep the place nice and tidy for you when you come back. Just make sure that you take it easy. Concentrate on your words when people are asking you questions. And get out of there as soon as possible so we can have a nice, lovely reunion.
Yeah, hopefully soon. Thanks, Janice.
She says, no problem. if I get a chance in the next couple of days, I'll come say hi.
I'd like that.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.
All right, she hangs up.
I think he holds the phone for a minute, you know, kind of like puts it up to his head. You know what I mean? Like, he's mm-hmm. kind of like, ugh. And then just, you know, it lets it drop back into the receiver, puts the phone next to him on the bed. I think he just settles back into the pillow.
Yeah. So you kind of sit there for a little bit and you kind of let your mind wander and you kind of fall asleep for a little bit. Luckily, you don't dream the dreams of people who have too much on their conscience. And after a while, you hear some loud footsteps that come into your room and Officer Buttig is standing just inside the room.
Yes, like if he's just sort of dozing, right? Like the clatter of the, you know, the staccato of the shoes kind of wakes him up. And I think he, you know, he's leaning back and he's kind of like opens his eyes and like picks his head up to like look around, like what just woke me up, and then sees him standing inside the door.
He's like, Mr. Armstrong, are you okay to talk?
Forgive me for not standing up. And he chink.
And he just like, he kind of shakes his head like he, like you can feel like he's talked to Officer Freitag. And he's like, yep. Same argument, but unfortunately he's nothing is going to happen at the moment. And he takes out a little notebook and a pencil and he says, just want to get back to some of the questions I was asking the other night. When I was speaking with you, you forgot to mention how the car lost control before it crashed.
He closes his eyes like he's trying to remember, right? Because it's all kind of fuzzy, you know, being in a, I think he was in a coma necessarily, but like just, you know, being knocked out, drugged up, whatever.
Yes.
And I think he runs through like the whole thing again. Like we were out to dinner. We were getting in a cab. I got hit in the head. I woke up in the back. He had me he had us handcuffed. You know, Jane was still out. You know, by weird bit of synchronicity, I had my key in my pocket. I should probably be doing this in voice, right? I had my handcuff key. I was able to wiggle out, you know, to get out of the handcuffs. He said he was taking us back to the apartment and he was gonna, you know, he was gonna take care of things. I thought the only thing I could do was I hit him. I couldn't let him do what he wanted, so I punched him in the head and you know, he lost control, but the car was still on the road. And I hit him again, and Jane was still, she was still out. And then he entered that intersection and then the car hit us. And then everything was crazy after that. I mean, everything was crazy before that.
So he's scratching everything down or whatever. And he says, so this Ace Johnson, this FBI agent, did he ever come speak to you? Did he ever talk to you about things that was on his mind? Why do you think that he was so into you and your lady friend?
You know, I don't really know. He approached me one night when we were out, and he started leaning on me real hard. He said I knew bad people, and I had, you know, bad connections and this and that. He showed me his badge and gave me his card, said he worked the mafia division for the FBI. I mean, a case I had, I don't know, about a year ago, I don't know if you remember, it was a Marcus Woodard. He was killed, and his sister, they I think the officers at the time said that it was suicide, and she didn't believe it, so she had hired me. And I started to look into it, and I mean, I don't know how much this makes a difference. She had, her mom was married to one of the crime bosses, but like she didn't remember because she was young. And it was, I wound up getting leaned on by the John Costa, the guy that got killed. They came into my office one day and started tossing the place, giving me a hard time. They told me that, you know, I had to talk to DeLuca. So, I mean, what was I going to do? I went in, you know, I told him what I knew about the case. I didn't know. She didn't know at that time that she was, that was her, that was her dad. That was her dad, right?
DeLuca was her stepdad, basically. Biotti was the real dad because he had, Biotti had been messing around with his mom behind DeLuca's back.
That was her stepdad, but she didn't know. And, you know, Marcus didn't say, he was a little bit older. Some newspaper guy got, there was a picture in the paper. The guys down at the department were giving me a hard time. So I don't know if he thought maybe I knew something or, you know, had some kind of connection. That's not circles that I want to be in or have to deal with. I'm just a PI. That's for you guys to handle that kind of thing. But he was leaning on me pretty hard. He came into my office one day, started tossing the place, just making a big stink. Said he, you know, I was going to do it, and he was just hell bent for leather that, you know, he wanted me to help him. I told him no, there's no way that I was going to do that. That's not, you don't want to be on people's like that's radar. That's not good. I mean, he's the FBI guy. I mean, well, what the hell am I going to do? And then he disappeared. And I had heard through the grapevine that he had killed John Costa. So I don't think the FBI sanctions stuff like that. So, I'd heard that he was on the run. So I didn't think I was going to hear from him again. I thought even maybe, you know, one of the, you know, those mafia guys that whack him, you know, I mean, that's, you don't mess around with guys like that, FBI or not. Right. I mean, that's, I don't imagine they'd care very much, especially not if they killed his partner already.
So you found out about this John Costa being murdered by Ace Johnson. You said that somebody told you that happened. Who is this person?
He looks visibly uncomfortable. It's what would he say? So Brian told me I definitely wouldn't throw Brian under the bus. I wouldn't throw Spirino under the bus because he's a new contact. He says through grapevine, you know how it is. You hear things, you talk to people.
Roll me a fast talk.
He says, look, I don't want to get nobody in trouble.
DL 5.
What was it?
5.
Okay. Yeah, six on the die, so 7.
Yeah. All right. So we'll say that he doesn't push you any further. Well, let's just say that he believes it and he doesn't push you any further. I'll just give you that and, unless there's something else you want to do for the end.
No, I think that's fine. I mean, the other part of the end could be like that he understands, right? Mm-hmm. That it's probably somebody from the police department.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So then he's like, so this Ace Johnson goes into your place, tussles it up, threatens you. Then he kidnaps you and this lady friend of yours. That must have made you pretty angry.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but that's not how it went. Like I said, he knocked me out and put me in cuffs. I am a licensed private eye. I have a firearm. It's in my house. I don't know if you guys already went to go look, but it's in my closet. It's locked in a box. I was at the dinner with my girlfriend. I didn't kill him.
So he's like, were you aware that that no weapon was found on the scene?
How could I?
You know, knowing that your girlfriend, this Miss Michaels, is, you know, handcuffed in the back, and you know, you two don't have very much chance to survive. That I mean, that's really got to rile you up, doesn't it?
No. I mean, I see the way you're trying to take this, but no, it's not like that. I thought that if I could subdue him, you know, I had the cuffs that I could, you know, even if the car crashed into a parked car or something where we could get out, you know, that we could get away. He was already on the run. I mean, what do I need to do? I mean, why even come after me? It doesn't, what does that solve? I didn't kill his partner. Look, my record's clean. I've been working in the city for a while now. You run anything you want on me. I got nothing to hide.
He says, you mentioned that you have a firearm. Is it registered, and what type of weapon is it?
Yeah, it's I don't know, would they be registered then? I guess so.
I assume back then you'd still have to be.
I mean, 40, yeah, probably. I guess so. Like, he would probably have to fill out something with his, you know, PI application, yeah, or licensing stuff. And he says, yeah, it's an M1911. It's a 45 caliber pistol.
Yeah, and he starts jotting it down and stuff like that. And he's like, okay, we'll check on that. He kind of, he gives you a, not a stern look. He gives you kind of a more softened look than he's been doing. And he says, is there any other information that you can think of that would help in this case?
Debating on whether or not I want to say that Johnson said that he was working for Biotti. I mean, it doesn't hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's corruption at the FBI, I guess that's probably good information to have. So he says, when he was going on, he had been mumbling to himself, and then, you know, we saw I was up. He said something. I couldn't put it all together, but he was working for Frank Biotti. He was going to deliver us to Biotti, or he was going to bring our bodies to Biotti. I don't know why. I mean, I know who he is. Everybody knows who he is. I don't, never had any interactions with the guy. I don't know. I don't know why that matters. I don't know what he was doing.
So his eyes light up or whatever. And he says, Biotti, Frank Biotti.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He says, is there any other instances where Mr. Johnson referenced Mr. Biotti's name?
Like, he looks up in a way thinking, and then he slowly shakes his head. He's like, no, he had been, every time prior to this, he'd been focused on DeLuca. This was the first time that he had mentioned Biotti, but it doesn't, like, he starts to sit up and then, like, winces and grabs his side and then, like, lays back into the pillow. He says, if DeLuca killed his partner and he was working for Biotti, it doesn't make any sense, unless maybe he was looking for a fall guy. I don't know. I don't know. Everything happened so fast. I don't know. But it's the only time he mentioned them.
So he starts jotting stuff down. He says, okay, I think I have what I need. He's like, you've been very helpful. I know that the situation is not where you see yourself, but we have to hit anger. We have to try every angle.
Yeah, I mean, good luck. How long are we going to, you know, chink, have to do this for?
And he kind of looks at you and he says, hopefully for not much longer. He says, I just have to take this information and check it against our records and see if anything else pops up. In the meantime, get some rest.
Doesn't look like I could do anything else. For what it's worth, I got a friend downtown named Brian O'Shea. He'll vouch for me. Brian's a good guy. He helped me out on some stuff before, and I helped him, for what it's worth.
And he was putting away his notebook, but then he pulls it back out and just jots it quick. He says, I'll look into that. Have a good afternoon, Mr. Anderson.
As good as it can.
He leaves. You're kind of left alone with your thoughts a little bit about what you've said or what you've, the conversation that you've gleaned from him. Is there anything that goes through your head as you kind of ponder what, you know, the questions he's asking? And was there any information that you gleaned from that or anything?
I want to ask if I can roll an insight, but I feel like he's doing his job, right? Like, I don't know that. Well, so his eyes kind of light up when I mentioned Biotti, right? So, like, that's maybe a little bit different. So could I have rolled an insight into that? But to what end though, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
He was interested. I already know that.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Basically, you know, and it sucks too, because when it comes to like these kind of things, it's like you have to ask the right question. Otherwise, I can't give you too broad of, you know, answers, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
I don't think so. Cause again, right, like I feel like it's, you know, we've got to cross all the I's and dot all the T's, and you know, you were there at a murder.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, it doesn't matter what kind of situation is happening, like You know, they have to make sure that everything is cool. Because, again, even though you look sympathetic, it doesn't mean you are.
Yeah. I can't argue for anything because I don't feel like anything stands out. And I don't know that, like, he's really in the frame of mind either.
Yeah.
To have been, like, reading him that way, like, as he was giving him information. Like, he almost wasn't even looking at him while he was talking to him.
Yeah.
Just sort of, like, recounting, you know, the stuff that happens to the best of his ability.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. So you sit there for a while, you're just kind of contemplating things, running things through your head, there's a lot of unanswered questions. Things are kind of nagging at you kind of thing. It gets to around supper time. They give you some food, some nice soft foods to eat. They, you know, get you another coffee or water, whatever you want. And then afterwards, Detective Freitag comes back in and he says, I was told you are okay to have a visitation with your lady friend.
He starts moving to, like, get up out of the bed. Mm-hmm. Grunts because your ribs, and he's chained to the bed, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna need a hand."
Mm-hmm. And he goes to unlock your cuffs or whatever, and he says, "No funny business." And then he kind of giggles, like he's kind of serious, but he's also kind of like, don't even think about it kind of thing.
Yeah. See, nothing to worry about for me.
All right. So, yep. So he uncuffs you, puts the cuffs back in his pocket. He escorts you downstairs. So it's going to be kind of not very fun because back then, huh?
They put me in a wheelchair.
Oh, well, they
he just pushes me down.
Yeah, I suppose we could do that. Yeah, why not? We'll say like the nurse pushes you down. He wouldn't push you down. So let's say the nurse pushes you down. He's kind of following behind, and you go into Jane's room. It is starting to get to evening, so it's starting to darken a little bit. She's there. Heartbeat monitor is low. It's not critically low, but it's low for living being.
Normal.
I don't know how to say that. Bruises kind of all over, her arms are kind of exposed. You can see a couple, some bruises on her arms, kind of on her face.
She's got a cast on.
Yep, exactly. Cast on her left arm, cast on her right leg. And there is a older lady that is sitting in a chair with her head in her hands.
I don't think he notices right away. Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess if they push him like into the door, mm-hmm. right, I guess he would see her sitting there.
Yeah.
Do they push me over to the bed?
Yeah, I would say that. Well, actually, let's say this. Let's say they start to come in and the nurse says, she's like, Miss Michaels, this is Mr. George Armstrong. He knew your daughter. He's here for a visitation, if that's okay. And she lifts her head out of her hands or whatever. And she says, she looks towards you and she has a pained look in her face. Eyes welled up with dry tears. And she nods.
They push me in then?
Yep. Then they push you next to her. Yep.
Next to her.
Next to Jane.
Her mom.
Yep.
Next to Jane. Okay.
It would be, it would be on her mom's on the opposite side towards the window in a chair.
I think if they push him right up to the bed, he, reaches up and takes her hand and, he looks over Jane to what he assumes is her mom and says, have they said anything?
She says, she's in stable condition, but they don't know when or if she's going to wake up.
I think he just says, I'm sorry.
And her eyes kind of well up a little bit. And she says, I don't understand. Why would you put her in harm's way like that?
I didn't know. I didn't know. And he like hangs his head. And as he hangs his head, like a single tear drops and like hits the blanket that's mm-hmm. covering her, the sheet that's covering her.
And she says, I can't lose another one of my babies.
I think he doesn't even look at her. He just says, she's going to be okay. She has to be.
She kind of like shakes her head, like kind of at a yes position with her head. And she says, for your sake, she better.
And he like struggles mightily to stand up out of the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the nurse like tries to help him, he like, pushes or stands up.
Yeah.
And he leans over Jane. I don't know if she's got like a breathing tube in or anything like that.
Yeah, but she does.
Yeah, he gently kisses her on the lips. And you just see another tear, you know, hit her cheek and run down. So that looks like she's crying too.
And she just kind of, she starts crying a little bit and whatever. And she kind of has her head on one of her hands and she says, I don't think I can deal with this right now. You need to go.
He nods and you know, kind of doesn't plop down in the chair. 'Cause that'd be very painful.
Yeah.
But very awkwardly and painfully sits himself back down in the chair.
Yeah, for sure.
And I assume the nurse whisks them away then.
Yeah. As long as you like look like, you know, you are you going to do as her mom says? She takes the cue and she pushes you out with Officer Freitag behind.
This podcast is a proud member of the Legends of Tabletop Broadcast Network. For more gaming-related content, please visit www.legendsoftabletop.com.